सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ फ्रेंड्स We will be studying the Yoga Sutras. We can have two different approaches to this whole book. It is very difficult to summarize the whole Yoga Sutras in just a few talks. Maybe four or five talks will not be enough. So I think it will be wise to study aphorism by aphorism. When we read and try to explain one aphorism, then you will get an idea how to study Yoga Sutra. And afterwards, it will be easy for all of us to continue with the Yoga Sutra studies later on with the help of commentaries, sub-commentaries, and other things. Traditionally, how one should study it? Many of the times we have a complaint against such scriptures that yes, we have read them, but we don't get any benefit out of these scriptures. It is because we do not know how to study the scriptures. So let us try to look at the aphorisms from that standpoint. In the beginning, I would try to clarify the idea sutra. Sutra means a thread. Like suppose we have met here today and we have decided upon a plan that tomorrow at 4 o'clock we will meet at such and such place. And at one place suddenly two of us meet. You are going somewhere and I am here, but we can see each other from a distance. Then I show like that to you. You understand what is the meaning of that. That today at 4 o'clock we are meeting. So just reminding ourselves of that. So just four fingers will do to convey the whole meaning of this. Even we need not utter a single word. Sutras are like that. We use just a few words as a thread to remind us of something which is profound and of which so many of us know. People who are familiar with such paths, they know what these words mean. Therefore, there is a great technicality involved in all the words they use. So, in the beginning, I would try to clarify many of the misunderstandings about yoga itself. Yoga is very much familiar and popular in the West. If I am allowed to say so, it may be more popular in the West than in the East. Because of one fact that by yoga we understand a few physical exercises. And to some extent we accept pranayama to be one of the ways. But the main purpose behind our practice of yoga is very much physical. It is confined at the physical level only. But the whole Yoga Sutra has a different purpose altogether. These are steps. These asanas, they are one of the limbs of yoga. As you know, yoga has got 8 limbs. Yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyanam and samadhi. These are the 8 limbs. So asana, yama, niyama, asana is the third. One of the limbs, but it is not the goal. So, When we study the Yoga Sutras, we will see in the very beginning of the Sutras, the purpose of the whole Sutra literature of Yoga has been stated and explained. So, the first, there is a first aphorism. As I have said, aphorism or sutra means a lot of ideas have been packed in one simple saying. So, just to give an idea how serious yoga is, it is not in theory but in practice that the efficacy of yoga is proved, only in practice, not in theory. I will tell you a story of one of the greatest of the yogis who lived his life according to the Yoga Sutras. He is known as Hariharananda Aranya. He has commented upon the commentary of Vyasa on Yoga Sutras. Hariharananda Aranya, his great disciple, Dharma Megha Aranya, also was a famous commentator. On the commentary of his guru, he wrote sub-commentaries. This Hariharananda Aranya used to live in the Barabar hill areas in Bihar. Originally he was from Bengal, but he lived in Bihar for a long time and he was a great Sanskrit scholar. He dedicated his life to the practice of not only yoga but yoga sutras. He would take up each and every sutra and practice the truth behind that. So once one of his disciples, I guess Dharma Megha Aranya, requested him that he should write a commentary on the commentary of Vyasa on Yoga Sutra, because you are the only person available who has checked the veracity of all the sutras in Yoga Sutra. Then he said, no, I have not yet tested the truth behind a sutra. I need to test that, then only I would dare to write commentary on Yoga Sutras. What is that sutra? It says, Ahimsa Pratishthayam Tat Sannidho Vairatyagaha. When someone is established in the vow of non-injury, even very ferocious, cruel animals would shun their violence in his presence. How far is it true? It is a very, very dangerous proposition to go to even test this. But Hariharananda decided to test this, the truth behind this sutra. So he went into the forest with a few of his disciples. He went and chose a place where he would live for some time. And to the knowledge of the villagers and people around, this forest had a few tigers, leopards, bears and such other things. Hariharananda continued to live in a cave. He used to live alone. Weekly once his disciples would go to give him some food for such provisions. And Hariharananda used to go to a water source which was the main source for the animals also. And he would get up early in the morning, and that is the time when they come to drink water there. And he go to that source and use the water and then bring some water to his cave. And his cave, the mouth of his cave was very well protected with a torn cloth. So he lived in that. Exactly how long he lived, I could not find anywhere, but presumably he lived there for about a year. And his disciples, when they used to go to him weekly once, they have seen tigers, bears many times. So it goes without saying that Hariharananda himself has seen them, has met them, And not only that, they have always watched over Harihara Ananda. So after some time, one day he said, now this is tested, now let me go back. So he has not said what happened, but we can guess very well what happened. He lived in that condition and he has met many times, but maybe he encountered a hungry tiger or bear or anything like that. And because of his practice of non-injury, vow of non-injury, they did not attack him or did not do any harm to him. So he has written that commentary. Yoga is that practical. Each and every aphorism in the Yoga Sutra is that practical. That is why Swami Vivekananda says, yoga is science of religion. If you want to practice it, it is there for you to do that. And the effects of your practice is very much there, provided you do it not for a long time, just for a short time. Like I would tell you one simple thing, just anyone can test with it. If you want to hear noise at a long distance, sound at a long distance, we can just try to practice with it. Follow the sound of a car which is moving away. Just wait for some time and concentrate on that sound, you can hear it for long distance. And generally it is not possible. This I have tried myself. So when you are at a very quiet place, a car is just passing by your house, just concentrate on that sound. You will hear a car for a long time and it is normally not possible. And if you go on concentrating on this type of things, you will gain faith that it is possible. So a very few such examples have been given in the Yoga Sutras so that they should inspire us in our path. So in the Yoga Sutra itself, Patanjali has given us about 8 ways, alternatives have been given. He knows that we are not that gifted, that strong to follow the path. So he has given a few alternatives. The first thing, first method is the most difficult but quickest. First one is most difficult but quickest. And the last one is easiest but longest. See, in the Ramayana there is a story. When Vishwamitra came to ask for help from Dasaratha, that you give me the 2 bright princes like Rama and Lakshmana to come with me because the demons are disturbing our worships. So we want to get rid of them. So we want the help of these 2 great princes, Rama and Lakshmana. So he came and he asked for their help. But Dasaratha had great love for these 2 princes. So he thought, Vishwamitra will not recognize who is Rama, who is Lakshmana. So instead of Rama Lakshmana, he sent Bharata and Shatrughna with him. And Vishwamitra took them for Rama and Lakshmana and then set out in his journey back home. But on the way, when he was speaking with these 2 kids, then he had doubts. He developed some doubts. They may not be those great princes because these people do not speak like them. So reaching the forest, Vishwamitra said, now there are 2 ways. We have to choose between them. One is leading us through the den of these demons. But that is the shortest. We will reach there within 3 hours. We reach home within 3 hours. But we have to go through a path which is infested by these demons. There is another path which takes 1 full day, but we will be quite safe, enough water and fruits to eat. Then it will be nice for us to reach home, but it will take a whole day. Which one would you choose? Immediately both of them said, no, we go by this way. Maybe it takes long time, but it is very safe. Then Vishwamitra said, then you are not Rama, I am Lakshmana. That is the thing. So, for just a few of the very, very strong people or votaries, the first one is prescribed, So we know from the Gita also, we know this idea, because Sri Krishna himself is called the Yogeshwara, he is the Lord of Yogas. So he has also said that the first path is the easiest, in the sense that it needs practice only. But he says, Abhyasena tu Kaunteya Vairagyena Chagrishate. Abhyasa Vairagya Abhyam Tan Nirodha, Yoga Sutra says. Abhyasa means constant practice and Vairagya means practice of dispassion. So this has been said like that. That is the most difficult path. And the easiest, as Patanjali himself says, is, okay, if you say it is very difficult for me, then I say the next alternative. You say that is also difficult. We remember the story of Girish Ghosh. When Sri Ramakrishna said that do two pranams in a day in memory of the Lord, remember Lord and pray to him, and two times. Girish Ghosh said, I have no sense of day and night. I don't know when is one, when is two. Like that, finally he said only one pranam a day, short listing for our benefit. Reduce the number, we cannot do so much. And he reduced the number and finally he said only one. He said that also I cannot do. And Sri Ramakrishna said, take the whole responsibility on me, power of attorney on me. So that is a different story. Here also, Patanjali says, if you say this is very difficult, then I tell you something easier. Then third one, easier, still easier. And finally, if you do, take up any object you like. Finally, he says, if you feel so difficult, this all these things, whatever I said, take up any object you like and just practice. Yatha abhimata dhyanatva. The last one, last alternative of the eight, last one is, take up any object. Yatha abhimata, whatever you like. I am not telling you to do anything. You like, whatever you like, and practice. Then it will help. So, yoga is in practice. And therefore, when we study the Yoga Sutras, we should always keep it in mind that this is not meant for any academic interest. We have read so many things. They have not filled our heart, they have not filled our quest. So here is something available. It is very, very scientific, provided we have the courage to practice it. And that is why the first aphorism of the Yoga Sutra says the same thing. Let us go according to the book. The first aphorism is Atha Yoga Anushasanam. Three words. Atha, generally Atha is a word which has been used by all the sutra makers. Like the Brahma Sutras, means Vedanta Sutra starts with Athato Brahma Jignyasa, Atha. Athato Karma Jignyasa, Atha. Atha, Athato Bhakti Vyakhyasyama. Atha, Atha, Atha. This word Atha comes everywhere. What is the meaning of this word? In Sanskrit, each and every word has a tradition and meaning. And they say one should be careful about the small words. They are very small but very, very dangerous. So, like eva and eva. Eva means as it were. Eva means one should do it. Surely. Eva means surely. So, eva means just as it were. Similarly, cha. Cha has so many different meanings. In law also, you practice and can be both conjunctive or disjunctive, and can mean. So, each word has its meaning in that particular literature. So, cha is a word, this Vyasa used to use this, cha. So, wherever it is needed, Vyasa will take out one cha and put there, cha. So he is known as Chakukshi. Chakukshi means he has so many chaws in his pocket. So Kukshi means in the armpit. So in the pocket, he takes it out and then makes it. So here also in the Yoga Sutras, you will see that Patanjali has used va many times. What is the meaning of va? Va means alternative, or, like that. Similarly, this word atha also has a deep meaning behind it. Atha means, atha is equal to om, not exactly equal to, they are synonymous. They mean the same thing. Mangalam. Mangalam means for some auspiciousness. It will give the idea of auspiciousness. But at the same time, some places it says atha means anantaram, means after this. After this means once you have passed 8th standard, you have a certificate, then you produce it. After that, you will be allowed to sit in 9th class. So it is like that. So something precedes. What is that? If you have a mind to practice and you understand that this is the thing which I am asking for or which I was seeking, then means after that. So atha also means that. Here atha means once you have come to this decision that you will practice yoga, then this yoga starts. Atha, yoga anushasanam. Let me explain the word anushasanam. Anushasanam means to rule, to teach. That is why shas is the root from which shasanam has come, to teach. Anushasanam means shasanam anu. Once you have been taught it theoretically, one has to practice it. Anu means after. After you have been taught, start practicing. I will tell you a nice story. One of our young brahmacharis, I will keep the name to myself, so approached one of the senior swamis in those days, then asked him, Maharaj, are you free? He said, yes. I have some questions on samadhi. So this fellow has come very new and he wants to show off that he knows something about meditation and he knows something about samadhi. What to speak of simple meditation, he is still higher, of a greater means quality. So he says, I have some questions on meditation. The senior Swami, he knows all these problems, you know. So he said, well, I will answer all your questions provided you follow something what I say. The what? He was very spirited. He said, yes, whatever you say, I will follow. Well, about a month or 3 weeks or a month, you have to practice what I say. Yes. How long do you sit for meditation? 20 minutes. Increase it to 40 minutes. Okay, all right, that I can do. All these things, how do you sit? No, I sit like that. No, sit straight. And then he showed the posture, how it should be. Posture, when you sit straight and then rock the body a little bit forward and backward, then you find that it is moving on a pivot, as it were. And that is the posture. And try to do it for some time, then you will just strike that. And then you know that is the posture. Sit like that. So he instructed and said, after 3 weeks at least, you should come and then I will answer your questions on samadhi. Then what to speak of 3 weeks, after a few days, maybe 4 or 5 days, he came back to the Swami. Maharaj, I have some questions. He said, so quickly? I asked you to come after 1 month. He said, no, I am not asking anything about samadhi, but my problem is different. What is that problem? No, when I sit, my thigh becomes numb. What to do about that? And when I am sitting here, it starts burning, paining. What to do about that? It is very unbearable. Then the Swami said, now you see, your questions are now burning questions. You are not asking anything about samadhi. You are asking so means things about very, very ordinary and preliminary things, physical. Your questions are burning questions. They are burning you. So there is no fantasy about it. It is very, very painful questions because you are suffering from this. So when you start sitting for meditation, then you ask questions, then we know at what level you are. Your questions will prove at what level you are. So this is the practical side of it. So once you start practicing, your questions will be progressively different. When we start meditating, our questions will be progressively different because our idea about ourselves will undergo a progressive change. Our idea about the object of our meditation will undergo a progressive change. Our idea about meditation itself will undergo a progressive change. That is the truth about yoga and meditation. So anushasana means go and sit down and practice. Then you know what is samadhi. It is painful here, it is becoming numb here. All these things are questions and they are experiences one should undergo to achieve the goal. Experiences. They are part and parcel of spiritual life. There is no spiritual life which can be bought at $2, $10. No. It has to be earned by one's own effort. That is what is called Yoga Sutra. That is why Swami Vivekananda says, yoga is science of religion. That is what science is. So, this is the third word in that aphorism. Then the middle word is yoga. And this holds the key to the whole Yoga Sutras. Once we understand the word yoga, then we know what Yoga Sutra is all about. Therefore, yoga word has to be explained and needs to be explained very, very correctly because there is lot of misunderstanding about this word because it has been misinterpreted hundreds and thousands of times. I will just startle you with one interpretation. And that is, if I ask you what is the meaning of the word yoga, what would be your answer?
Communion with the Lord.
Communion with the Lord. And further, and we have learned Sanskrit word yoga means a connection, a communion. But Yoga Sutra, yoga is a disconnection. This is the philosophy. We mix up many philosophies, many technicalities together and say that yoga means a connection. No, that is according to Vedanta, not according to this yoga. If we remember, in the Gita, Sri Krishna says, tasmattam buddhi sanyoga vyogam yoga uchyate. Vyogam is called yoga. Buddhi sanyoga vyogam. We have been connected with this world, worldliness. When we are able to dissociate that, means connect, we dissociate ourselves from the buddhi, then that is what is called disconnection. This is what is called yoga. So, this is not yoga. Buddhi sanyoga vyogam. Yoga is called yoga. Yoga uchyate. Sri Krishna clarifies that. And in the Yoga Sutra itself, I believe this may be the 25th or 15th of the 15th sutra of the second chapter of Raja Yoga, Patanjali Yoga, which says that Sangyoga Abhava. It says that Sangyoga Abhava is called Hanam Tasmat Tadrishehe Kaivalyam. Tadabhavat Sangyoga Abhava. When we have Abhava means what? The connection is lost. Sangyoga Abhava. Hanam, this is what is called Hanam. We have severed the connection. Tasmat, therefore, tad drishehe kaivalyam. That is what is called kaivalyam. That is for the person who is trying to realize. So, he dissociates himself from the bondage to this world. That is why yoga does not mean any connection, but it means disconnection. So this is the first thing we have to unlearn, not learn, unlearn. Because we have learnt it so many times, it will be difficult to unlearn it. So we have to keep our mind very clear that yoga does not mean a connection, but it means a disconnection. I'm just trying to find that one. Yeah. Tadabhavat sanyoga bhavaha hanam tadrishehe kaivalyam. Swami Vivekananda translates this as There being absence of that ignorance, there is absence of junction, which is the thing to be avoided. That is the independence of the seer, which is called yoga. Tadabhavat sanyoga-bhava. Sanyoga-bhava means vyoga, and that is the meaning of the word yoga. So, when we study things very closely and understand them properly, then things become easier actually. So yoga does not mean a connection, it means a disconnection. We are very much connected to this world. Holy Mother says, I mean Sri Ramakrishna also says, but very significantly Holy Mother says, it is not bad to live in this world, but to be off this world. See, where is the stress? It is not bad to live in this world, where otherwise should we live? But it is bad to be off this world. And this off holds the key to this yoga. And we have to dissociate this. We have to dissociate ourselves from identification with things which are not God. Identification with things which are not the spirit. We have wrongly identified ourselves to matter. And we equate spirit and matter wrongly. And that is called ignorance. So this ignorance has to be removed, and that is the purpose of yoga. So when we understand the meaning of the word yoga, and therefore the purpose becomes clear, then we know what is the meaning of this word atha. Do we want? I want to know the principles of physics. What have I, should I do? I buy a Sanskrit grammar book. Will it help me? This is not the argument I am placing before you. This is what Swami Vivekananda has said. That you are trying to know, unravel the mystery of this physical universe, and you are trying to find it in the book which is called Sanskrit grammar. What will happen? You are reading a book, but you are reading a wrong book. It is not available there. We are trying to find joy in matter and material things, but we don't get that joy. Actually speaking, matter cannot give us progressive joy. Suppose I like to eat, suppose say, pizza. One pizza, how much happiness does it give? So if we quantify happiness and say there is a unit to express what happiness is, then suppose I say one half. One pizza holds one half or 10 halves of happiness. So I eat one pizza, it gives 10 halves. If I eat 2 pizzas, 20 halves. So to get more happiness, I eat 100 pizzas. Is it possible? After one pizza, I feel so much nauseating sensation. 2, I vomit out. 3, then I become sick. So it leads to sickness, world weariness, weariness. So like that. So this material universe does not give us that happiness because of one fact. Why? What is that? We are searching for happiness at a wrong place. It is not there. Clearly it is not there. Otherwise we would have got all happiness in this world. But we don't get it here because it is not there. We are searching for it at a wrong place. There is a logic, you know, argument. The Schrodinger's cat, you know, that story is there. So this argument is that there is a dark room, you are asked to search for a black cat in a dark room. They say, to make it more intense, a blind man is asked to search for a black cat in a dark room. So it becomes still intense. Then they say, the logicians will find it. Now why? Because the argument goes, you are asked to search for a black cat in a dark room where it is not there. And the logician will find it. Because according to them, absence also is a reality. So, I feel the absence of X here because he is a reality. So, absence is a reality here. So, I feel the absence of abracadabra. Therefore, abracadabra is a reality according to the logicians. So, the logicians will find it, though it is not there. So similarly, we are trying to find happiness in this world and we are not succeeding in our effort and attempt. What is the reason? because the simple fact that we are searching for it at a wrong place. We are searching for a security in things which are themselves not secured. This is the truth about this world and worldly things. And this is what is called worldliness. This is what is called ignorance. So Yoga Sutra leads us by the hand and says that you are searching at a wrong place. I will show a place where it is there. Come with me. Why should you spend your time and energy for futile purpose, for futile things? Come with me. I will show you the place. Therefore, it says that yoga is speaking about your mind. They say mind is the thing which can lead us to destruction and which can lead us to fulfillment. There is a beautiful thing said in the Bible that it says that wide is the gate that leads to hell, destruction, and narrow is the gate that leads to eternal life, means heaven or to God. Now, Christ says very cleverly, he puts this equation very well, very nicely. Now, what is the distance between hell and heaven? Whatever it may be, it is always the same. It matters which way we are going. That is the thing. Distance is always the same between hell and heaven, but it matters which way we are going. And we know which way we are going. It says the wide is the gate that leads to hell or destruction. Why the gate is so wide? Because of demand and supply. The company has seen that so much demand and people coming and so therefore they had increased the size of the gate. So this is what is happening. So narrow is the gate that leads to life, and you will find very rarely people moving that way. So this is what is happening. We are all going towards destruction. So yoga is showing us the way. Come, I will show you. Those who are fortunate enough, they hear the call and then they come. Therefore, the gate is not very wide, but it is there. It is there. Christ himself says in the Bible that it is easy for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. It is not that rich man is bad, but this worldliness, attachment to worldly things, that is what is called richness here. And therefore, they won't be able to enter the kingdom of God. Sri Ramakrishna says, it is so difficult to drive a nail into a stone. The hits come back. Why? So hard. So the mind of the materialist is so hard, it has become so hard. So therefore, yoga shows us the way that your mind holds the key. It may lead you to destruction, it may lead you to liberation. Which one do you prefer? It matters. Which one do you want? Atha, which one do you prefer? I want eternal life. Therefore, this is the way. Now, the mind has a few levels. Or levels, not exactly levels, if I put so, it has got a few modes. Like the Yoga Sutra itself explains afterwards, but it has been also referred to in the commentary of the Vyasa. In most of the books, you will find that the first aphorism is explained in one or two sentences. That is over. But Vyasa gives a very nice reference to all the things which will be discussed in the Yoga Sutras, because they are necessary to convince us why we should study Yoga Sutra, not the Sanskrit grammar. Because that is the purpose, and that's what we want to know, what it is going to offer to us. And the offering has been made clear that mind has got a few modes. They say in Sanskrit, kshipta, mudha, vikshipta and ekagra. Kshipta means scattered mind. When the mind is scattered, means suppose I am just sitting, and just thinking, hundreds and thousands of thoughts are passing. I am not registering any one of them. This condition is called kshipta. Not a single thought is being registered, but I am just sitting idly, and it is not that the mind is calm and quiet, no thought is there. No. Hundreds and thousands of thoughts are coming and going, But when you ask, what did you think on, I don't know. I just passed time, I don't know what I was thinking or concentrating on. So this condition is called Kshipta condition. When is our mind is in that state, yoga is not possible. Over. First thing is over. Second is Moodha state, darkening. Swami Vivekananda translates it as darkening or dull mind. When the mind is dull, Moodha, that time what happens? We feel sleepy or disinterested. We are disinterested in anything. Whatever you bring, oh, will you go to a cinema? No, I am not very interested in this. I am not interested in anything. The mind is very, very dull. So, rather I am interested in sleeping. So, at that condition, yoga is not possible. Yoga is incessant activity. Swami Vivekananda will say afterwards, and we will also know that it is incessant activity. Now, the third one is Vikshipta. Vikshipta means properly scattered. No. Viparitena Kshipta. It is just opposite of Kshipta, scattered mind. It is a mind when it is sometimes gathered, sometimes scattered. So when there is a condition like that, it is sometimes scattered, sometimes gathered, then we know there is hope that now when the mind is gathered, we can catch hold of it and try to practice yoga. So mind sometimes scattered, sometimes gathered. You see, this world is a place where papa and punya, vices and virtues, they are equal. They are equally there. You cannot find a thing in this world which does not have the obverse and reverse together. You get a coin, it has a head and a tail. Head you win, tail I lose. Just like that. So, obverse and reverse of the same coin. Sukha, dukha. Both are going together. We cannot find unalloyed happiness in this world. A happiness which is always there without sorrow entailing it. We cannot find such an happiness. Pure happiness is not available. Today I am happy, tomorrow I am unhappy. So, it is not continuous also. It is not unalloyed, it is not continuous. And it is not absolute. Absolute in the sense, yes, I am happy because I have a Volkswagen car, but I see my neighbor has a BMW. Am I happy? So, I am jealous of that. So, my happiness is superseded by his happiness, because his happiness is more. So, we don't find a happiness which is absolute in this world. Every happiness has its improvement. Therefore, we are searching for a happiness which should be permanent, unalloyed and absolute. That happiness we don't get. So, similarly, in this world, everything is a mixture of things. That is why they say, if you are a rank materialist, then you have no problem. A rank materialist has no problem. A rank spiritualist also has no problem. The problem happens with us who are neither spiritual nor material. So what happens? We are spiritual materialists. Most of the cases are like that. In most of the cases, we are spiritual materialists. Neither spiritual nor material. Because we cannot go whole hog with matter, and neither can we deny the call of the spirit. And in between we are caught. And as Christ says, you will see, mass is there in this category. Most of the people are in this category. Then is the condition very hopeless? The scriptures say, no, you are blessed. There is a hope now that you are not going with matter completely. You are not completely taken over. You are in between. And you have to struggle, you have to fight, and fight out your own way. And that is what is spiritual life. That is what is called spiritual life. And that is what we should do. Yoga is saying that at this point, when mind is a bit scattered, a bit gathered, catch hold of this mind, then it will be still in yoga. So, this is the third thing. Kshipta, Moodha, Vikshipta. Then Ekagra. Ekagra is one-pointed. Meditation is not emptying the mind. It is like picking the wool from a blanket. What happens finally? Picking the wool from the blanket. What happens? The blanket loses its existence. It does not be, will not be there. Similarly, if you take out all thoughts from the mind, one remains. The mind does not exist. So therefore, it is not possible to empty the mind. In one of the lectures, it was given by someone else, and then I heard that CD. This gentleman said he spoke very well about mind. Now I wanted to hear that. I heard I was not very much happy with the explanation, but I was very happy with the question. What a great question this from the audience someone asked. By what thought, with the help of what thought you empty your mind? That thought is there. That is a great question. So meditation means continuance of one thought. It is not that the mind is just awakened and empty. It is that the mind is filled with one thought. One thought, and it is constantly going. Pratyaya ekatanata dhyanam. What is meditation? Continuance of one thought. Thought of God. How difficult it will be, we will see. When we try to practice, we will see how difficult it will be. Sri Ramakrishna himself has said that when I sat in meditation, I just discovered that my mind has traveled to Rasik's house. Rasik's house. So it happens in the case of Sri Ramakrishna, that he has sat for meditation and his mind has traveled to somebody else's house. And when we sit for meditation, we know our mind will be in Chicago, in New York, everywhere. And so accepting for the place where it should be. It is all moving around everywhere. So this is it holds a great hope for us. But we should be very careful to compare us with Sri Ramakrishna. Sri Ramakrishna's mind travelled to Rasik's house out of compassion for that, because he was the savior for that person. He was the savior, he has to save him. Therefore his mind travelled to Rasik's house out of compassion to save that soul. But our mind travels to many places not out of compassion, but out of passion, attachment. And in the Upanishadic language, this attachment is termed as emotional addictions. We get kicks, K-I-C-K-S, kicks, every time from every corner, but we go back to that place again. Why? Is it called attachment? No, addiction. Drug addiction like that. We cannot get rid of it. We need what? Rehabilitation is necessary. And that is what is presented by yoga. Rehabilitation. Practice of one good thought to forget this. That is the idea. You have to forget about this addiction. Therefore, get one thought which will relieve you from this addiction. So, pratyaya ekatanata. So, ekagra. The mind is kshipta, mudha, vikshipta, ekagra. Ekagra is also an idea that there the mind attains samadhi. Samadhi means, we will discuss that later on, how it happens and what it is. Samadhi is one-pointedness in such a manner that there is no break. So, like niravachinna taila dharavat, like a lamp, suppose it is burning and the flame in a windless place, where the wind is not blowing. So it is just straight, it is continuous, but it is being fed constantly with oil. So there is a continuous flow and it is still, it is looking still, one, single, concentrated. So this is the idea of samprajnata samadhi. We will discuss that later. And then the last one is called niruddha samadhi. Niruddha means you stop the supply of this oil. What happens? This flame does not remain. The mind loses itself because it is not being fed with all worldly things and other things. Then the mind dies automatically. We will discuss on that slowly how it happens. Such a great idea. So this is what is called niruddha. So the mind has to undergo these, this mind has got these possibilities. Now, when we catch the mind at the third stage, which set stage that is? Vikshipta. Vikshipta means vishesha rupena kshipta, too much scattered? No, no. Please don't write that. That is wrong. Viparita of kshipta means it is vishishta rupena kshipta. Sometimes scattered, sometimes gathered. So the mind has got how many modes? Kshipta, mudha, vikshipta, ekagra, niruddha. Five. We should remember this. Five modes of the mind. And the Yoga Sutra catches the first, at first, the third one, when the mind is a little bit alert, then catch hold of it, and then what will happen? Catch hold of it and dive deep, and do not come up. Like frequencies, you take, go down and don't come up, then the wavelength becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, you stay there. Where? You stay at the reference point, and that is nearest to ourself, and then we live in the present moment, in the presence of that self. We will slowly discuss this. This is a great idea. Not only it is a, this is not an idea actually. This is what we experience. There is no idea involved in this. This is what is called experience. When we live constantly near the flame, we not only get the light, we not only get illumination, not only we get illuminated by the light of the flame, but also we get heat. We experience. These are all experiences. We cannot deny it. Not only that, we can see the filament inside this, or the flame, what is happening inside this. So many things happen together when we live near this. And that is how we just dive and remain there. That is what is called the bottom of the lake, which has been referred to in Swami Vivekananda's Raja Yoga. Bottom of the lake, it is visible when there is no waves on the surface. So go deep down there and continue to remain at the bottom of the lake, at the presence of the ever-present self. And that is what is called present moment. We do not lose the present moment. What is future? What is past? Future and past. If we live in the past, we are dead. If we live in the future, we are not born at all. Therefore, we have to live in the present. And this is how to live in the present. Be in the presence of the eternal presence. That is why it is called present. So, this meditation helps us to remain constantly in company of that ever-present self or our being. Or our real recognition, existence. And it is there. Once we know it, we don't need any proof actually. What is the proof that there is a self? What is the proof that I exist? Do I need any proof that I exist? 6 billion people in the world do not know that a man called Swami Bhaneshananda lives on the surface of this earth. They do not know. Does that mean that I do not exist? Do I need any proof from others? I live, I exist by my own proof, and this is evident to me. It may not be evident to you or somebody else. This is evident to me because I am the proof of my existence. What more proof do I need? Therefore, it is not necessary that we have to prove that we exist. We have to prove that there is a self. We have to prove that that is divine. All these heat, light, knowledge, all these things will be experienced. Therefore, yoga is not any idea, it is an experience. We will speak further on this tomorrow. If you have any question, then it will be fine, I can answer them. Or it may be that if you ask questions, at the end of all sessions, then you will find that lot of the questions which will have come in your mind today will be solved tomorrow, day after tomorrow. We will try to discuss as clearly as possible. Hope that will help you. Okay. Then. Any? Yeah.
professor in physiology.
Yeah.
I studied in Sivankeshwara University, Tirupati.
Mm.
And I had been to the lessons of Maharshi Mahesh Yogi during some time.
Mm.
He talked about transcendental meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in your speeches, I have learned emptying of the mind and concentrating only in certain thing.
Mm.
And what is the main concept of that transcendental meditation? Meditation, you already told us.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a different subject.
Yeah.
And I think I am not competent to discuss anything on that. But I am trying to explain what meditation is from the source book, which is called Yoga Sutras. Actually, people tried to branch out of the Yoga Sutras and tried to float their own ideas. We are not much familiar with the efficacy of those ideas. So it is unscientific to comment upon those things, or more so to explain those things. But I would tell you one thing, that Yoga Sutra is the book which conceived the idea of meditation. And meditation, experience of meditation in Samadhi is only transcendental. Not before that. No meditation is transcendental. All meditation are phenomenal. There, everything is mechanical. If I have time to explain these things, you will see they are very much achievable because they are very much mechanical. But when we transcend the scope of the phenomenal reality, then only the experience of transcendental things come. And that is what is referred to by Kant in his famous critic, the theory critic of pure reason. That the thing in itself, not the thing as it appears to be, that the appearance is within the scope of this phenomenal world, and that is what is called relative world, and the system is called known as relativity. That is very much relative to our location and position, because we have positioned ourselves at this moving earth, so we can see that the sun is rising and setting, the sun is moving. Because of our location, this illusion happens. Even to a scientist who knows that the sun is not moving, the earth is moving around the sun. But still, his experience is this misleading experience that he sees the sun is rising and setting. This is because we are located on a moving planet. So, whatever comes under the scope of this material universe or physical universe, is always phenomenal, never transcendental. Therefore, meditation is never transcendental. Even the first stage of samadhi, which is called sampragnyata samadhi, is very much phenomenal. Only transcendental experience happens when we dissociate ourselves from this phenomenal world, and that is what is called asampragnyata samadhi. The knowledge that I belong to this world, or this world belongs to me, ceases to exist. And that is what is called transcendental experience. There is no meditation as such which is transcendental.
I have a question.
Yeah.
The third mode of the mind that you said, gathering and scattering, is there any guidelines for us to detect this kind of a phenomenon and to harness this power?
There is no guideline, it is your experience. As I said, when we are sitting and we are not able to register anything. Suppose you read a book, after reading two pages you know that you have not read anything. Though your eyes have read and really you have read, but you have not recorded anything, registered anything. So that is our experience. But suppose sometimes I see, yes, I read the first paragraph, I remember, but the second paragraph I don't remember. So, I know sometimes it was gathered, sometimes it was scattered. That is our experience. That no guideline is needed, we can just catch hold of that. And then I know that I can concentrate now. So, I concentrate on the next para and then continue. So, this way, and that point, yoga is possible because we know the mind is. Now you start doing that. When the mind is too much scattered, too much disturbed, meditation does not help. Meditation is not meant for children because they don't know how to partition the mind into one portion who is meditating, another portion which is observing. Children cannot do that, so meditation is not meant for them. But we can do that, and that is very everyone's experience. So this is like that. Any time when we try to meditate, we should see that we are in a very favorable state of meditation. That is why they say there are many preliminaries to meditation. Like when suppose we have come back from a hectic work and the whole mind is full of all disturbances, immediately don't try to meditate. They say move slowly. Do your things very slowly. Physically you become slow. Then you will see mind will cooperate with the body. Psychosomatic condition is there, always available. Mind and body connection is always there. If the body is slow, mind should become slow. If the mind is slow, body has to become slow. They go together. And modern medicines, you will see most of the diseases are psychosomatic. They are connected. Even for cancer also they find this connection. So now, therefore, this before starting meditation, one has to undergo these things. Wash yourself, dress yourself separately. Think, read a good book that will give you some idea. It means to maintain a mood like that. These things will be discussed. I don't know whether I'll get that much time, but maybe hopefully you'll get time to read through the books. They're there, and they're very, very mechanical. There is nothing mystic about it. Meditation is not mystic, but experiences of meditation are mystic. But practice of meditation is never mystic. It is very, very physical, very, very mechanical. That is the hope.
So Maharaji, you are saying gathering, this concentration gathering, so you keep on practicing the gathering, that would
increase the time.
You can come back and practice it.
Yeah, yeah. That is why Swami Vivekananda said that observe the mind, then suddenly you observe that it is in Rasik's house. It comes back. Immediately it comes back. So then I continue with that again. It needs practice. And it is not difficult also. Not difficult. When we observe a TV, every day the same episode is going on, and then I know I get so much attached, and then I am fully concentrated there. How does it happen? How does it happen? People are coming, shouting, children are running about, nothing bothers us. We are fully concentrated there, we don't hear. So, that is the Atmaiva Hyatmano Bandhu. The one's own mind is one's own friend. So the mind has to be taught in that sense. We have to accept it. So there are further things we will discuss. If I discuss those things today, tomorrow I won't have any material to speak on.
Maharaj, a lot of times you see that the first word atta translated as now. Do you think that's good?
Atta. Now means
now.
Yeah. That is the now or then, if you have followed. Now, since you have come, since you have you want to practice meditation, since you want liberation through this path of yoga, therefore now begins the scripture. Yeah.
Don't put it off is what it makes me think of. You don't procrastinate that, but get going with it.
Yeah. So something, it presupposes. Now means what happened before. So this now actually presupposes that answer. That way.
Level up adhikaritya, the atha, that we have to develop some qualification to actually.
Here, Patanjali makes it universal. In the sense, he does not say actually who is adhikari. Like you should be a man or you should be a woman, you should be Indian or you should be American, or you should be short or you should be tall. No such specification is given. So the idea is it is meant for all. Provided you want it, you want to achieve spiritual enlightenment or realization through this path. This is a separate path. So if you want to follow this path, then now starts the training or the explanations or whatever it may be. So I will try to explain yoga now. So it is universal. Therefore the word he uses, sarvabhaumatvat, Vyasa uses the word sarvabhaumatvat. Yoga is meant for all. Therefore it is appealing. Though in Indonesia they say yoga is a Hindu word, Muslims should not practice physical exercises to be called yoga. Halasana you do, but call it something else. So like that. But these are all peculiarities. But the idea is that he does not say that it is meant for this or that. It is meant for all whoever wants to realize or his nature or God or whatever it may be. Through this path, it is meant for them. Just come. You want to study physics? This is a book I prescribe. That's all. So, but you have to show that you have passed this standard. At least 10th class you are, 8th class you have passed, then you are given this book, physics. Otherwise, you are not given. So since you have done that, now you want to study physics, then this book is meant for you.
So Maharaj, if you have like meditation and you concentrate on certain points, what kind of thought, like you say you have to have one thought. So how would you determine what thought?
Yeah, if I tell you it in short or casually, it will not convince you. So tomorrow in my speech this will also come, because it is very, very correct and scientific approach. Everything has been properly explained and they are explained based on experiences. So they will be very, very clear. There is nothing mystic about it, that something will remain for later date to be experienced. No, everything will be explained. And then finally, the asampragnata samadhi is the experience. Other things are there, we can understand also. So like that, tomorrow we will also discuss on that, on what thought. The alternatives are thoughts only. The 8 alternatives, he gives 8. They are thoughts, varieties of thoughts have been given. You can just catch hold of one and continue like that. We'll discuss that. It is not difficult, but there are some kinds of difficulties in the sense of obstacles. But you know, in English there is a saying, obstacles are those frightful things you see when you take your eyes off the goal. This is very, very, very true. Obstacles are those frightful things you see when you take your eyes off the goal. Means you are looking at the obstacles. Not at the goal. There is a great example in the life of Shankaracharya. Shankara was staying near the bank of Alkananda, and his disciple Padmapada went for some errand to the other bank of that river. And Shankara called out because he needed his help. He was his sevak, assistant. Shankara called out by his name. And then he forgot about the surroundings. My guru needs my help. He ran. And what happened? He ran across that torrentially flowing river, Alakananda. And the nature also rose to the occasion, providing each footstep of Padmapada with a lotus to hold the foot of that great person. See, when I have seen myself, the dog just was out of the leash and it crossed the road in front of our house. And the man saw that, the gentleman saw that there was a car, speeding car coming towards this. He forgot about that car. He ran behind the door. The car broke so hard. It was. But see, we forget about this thing. When we are concerned about something, this environment or other things, Shankaracharya says that this environment, time, kala and space, samaya, these are secondary. These are secondary. Primary is our eyes on the goal. That is primary. These are secondary. They just don't hold much importance in that. If it is there, okay, fine, it helps. The environment helps. If it is not there, Sri Ramakrishna says, if the lotus, if the seed of lotus is in the fallen in the cow dung, but still it will grow lotus only because the potential is like that. So it is. So obstacles should not be looked at.